In recent years, oil and gas extraction has quickly surpassed forestry to become BC's dominant resource revenue. As in other parts of the world, First Nations in BC are disproportionately impacted by this rapid increase in drilling. The Indigenous Environmental Network is an alliance of First Peoples who are taking a stand for cultural preservation and against resource exploitation. Clayton Thomas Muller is the network's Indigenous Gas and Oil Campaign Organizer for North America, and he's joined us this morning in the studio. Good morning, Clayton.
Good morning. Good morning to everybody listening. It's a pleasure to be here.
I want to start out just talking about things that are happening locally, although your environment, your network goes from covers areas from Alaska to Mexico?
That's correct. We work all the way from the North Slope of Alaska down to the Gulf of Mexico to support our native peoples, you know, to fight against corporate exploitation and toxic contamination of our sacred homelands.
And I'm sure that is like a very important issue all across North America.
Oh, most definitely. The issue of energy, I think tops the scale when we look at, what's going on right now in terms of what's impacting our people, our land, and our way of life. Energy is right at the top of the list.
Hmm. Let's look locally at BC, because I know that resource extraction has been a huge issue here for First Nations. Right now, at this point, what areas of BC are most affected by mining efforts?
Well, I think the number one area that comes to mind, especially in the area of our First Nations peoples being impacted, is the Peace River region up by, Fort St. John, Chetwynd, British Columbia. That whole region has, pretty much been invaded by energy corporations, specifically gas companies, looking to extract the region's rich gas resources. And we've seen this government of British Columbia break the Canadian record for lease sales to give energy companies easy access with virtually no scrutiny into this beautiful, pristine area, to gain access to these resources that they're so desperately racing to get.
Hmm. So this is this whole area that would be just like south of the Yukon, basically. Is that what you call Treaty 8?
That's correct. It's the Treaty 8 region, and it's northeastern British Columbia. Hmm. Yeah.
What's been the impact of oil and gas extraction on the health of these communities?
Well, in that particular part of the world, the gas resources that they're pulling up out of the ground there are what's known as sour gas, and they have a very, very high level of hydrogen sulfide, or H2S. And the problem with this is when you drive up by Fort St. John at nighttime and you look over the horizon to, say, take a look at the night sky, your view is obscured by horrific natural gas flares coming up from all of the, flaring towers that are part of the infrastructure of the oil and gas operations in that part of the province. And so these flares spew all kinds of volatile organic compounds up into the atmosphere. There's all kinds of so-called safety releases of these byproducts, if you will, of the gas and the oil that's being extracted there. And it's put into the atmosphere. It's put into the air. For all of the local people, First Nations and non-First Nations people living in the area who are day by day suffering the cumulative impacts of being exposed to these cancer and respiratory illness causing chemicals like benzene, like hydrogen sulfide. And basically, there's all kinds of signs all throughout the area that say warning, H2S levels dangerously high. And one First Nations community in particular, I believe it's called the First Nation Blueberry, has actually experienced a number of evacuations when these H2S levels go above safety standards. And so you take a look at that, along with the accumulative impacts of First Nations people being removed even further from their traditional food stores, because many of our people still subsist off of the land. They still rely on the moose. They still rely on, acquiring berries and different sacred food items from, our Mother Earth. And with the exploit of, oil and gas, of course, that fractures our landscape. All kinds of roads roads and pipelines and drilling pads need to be built to accommodate this horrifically landscape fracturing industry. And so what that tends to do is to further remove our people's ability to subsist off of the land in a good and balanced way. Therefore, you see the rise in diabetes, because people no longer can eat what's healthy for them. They have to rely on foods, Western foods. And then on top of that, you know, there's a lot of other cumulative impacts that come into the picture.
It sounds like a very, when I'm listening to you here, I can actually kind of imagine the kind of complexity of the ways that that the oil and gas extraction is assaulting Native people, because it's everything. It's habitat. It's cultural traditions. It's food. So tremendous kind of impacts there. What are the policies of the provincial government currently in BC that are kind of increasing the oil and gas extraction at this point?
Well, it's scary, you know, in a time when, you know, catastrophic global warming threatens virtually every segment of life on Mother Earth, including human beings, you know, because we're a part of that circle of life. We see governments like the government of BC, like the government of Canada, and of course, like Big Brother, the government of the United States of America, aggressively seeking to acquire every last remaining fossil fuel source that they can to extend this ridiculous fossil fuel economy another 50 years or however long they want to do it. This government is no different here in British Columbia. If you look at the energy policy, there's virtually no commitment whatsoever to renewable energy development. They are aggressively selling off at ridiculously low rates, leasing rights, for oil and gas companies to access BC's rich energy resource, fossil fuel energy resources. These energy resources need to stay in the ground. This government needs to demonstrate the political will to invest in renewable energy development. Solar, tidal power, wind power. We have all kinds of capacity here in this province to do that. But as it stands right now, they are not. They're looking for the quick buck, and you know, they've been seduced by the energy companies.
Your organization, the Indigenous Environmental Network, talks about these issues in terms of environmental justice and environmental racism. Why do you think it's important to use those frameworks when talking about First Nations and resource extraction?
Well, environmental justice, basically, for the listeners, to sum it up in a nutshell, the term environmental justice, or rather the movement that carries the name environmental justice movement, basically it dictates this, that everything, all life on Mother Earth, including us human beings, the ones that cannot speak for themselves, the four-legged, the ones that swim, the ones that fly in the air, and the ones that crawl under Mother Earth, we all have the right to clean air. We all have the right to clean water, and we all have the right to clean earth. And so the Indigenous Environmental Network, we work to support our communities to assert that right, because of the fact that our communities, because of racism, because of the gross inequities that still exist to this day here in Canada and in other parts of the world, to Indigenous peoples, our communities are disproportionately impacted to become sites of toxic industries like oil and gas development, like toxic refineries, like medical waste incinerators, like landfills, you know. And they basically, developers, government, tend to focus their goals of development on our areas because of the fact that they think that we're not going to speak up for ourselves.
I think it's interesting that you've kind of added on this term justice to environmentalism, bringing together those issues.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you take a look at the last 100 years of the environmentalism movement, I mean, there's been a lot of, for lack of a better word, I would say tension with First Nations and the environmentalist movement or the conservation movement because of the ethnocentric perspective and approach of the environmentalism movement. There's been a lot of friction, I guess you could say, because for First Nations people, environmental issues are human rights issues for us because of the fact, if you look at the last, you know, millennia, time immemorial, our people have lived closely observing, watching our environment, developing our social, spiritual, you know, political and economic systems based upon the changing seasons, based upon the biomimicking of our environment so that we could live in a balanced and positive way. And so we are very much a part of that circle of life. And this concept of wilderness, of vast empty spaces, has always been foreign to us because that is our home. That is our sacred place where we call home. And so when we put that justice, environmental justice, on there, it's to accommodate that reality, that First Nations reality of environment, of what needs to be done environmentally. It is our home. It is a justice issue for us because of the fact that our home has been assaulted.
You work with First Nations communities across North America on oil and gas extraction. Do you see particular issues that First Nations in BC have to deal with compared to your experience with First Nations elsewhere?
Well, no. I mean, oil and gas industry is the most powerful corporate, you know, group in the world right now. The impacts in every territory are virtually the same. You know, oil and gas companies are moving to access, you know, resources everywhere they can, and they're very patient about it. You know, they let political fights happen, they let governments take the hits for them, and they just sit back and wait, you know. And so here in BC, what I've observed basically is that Indigenous peoples in this province need to be very aware of the disturbing trend that we are seeing across the board in Canada in terms of gas development. There is a lot of move by this BC government and by other provincial governments to quickly, as fastly and quickly as possible, develop gas resources. That's coal bed methane, conventional gas, to sell them off to a burgeoning U.S. emerging gas economy. The United States is quickly moving their electric generation to what's called as gas-fired power plants, and they're buying up as much natural gas as they can, and they want to get it from Canada. And so we have to basically really take a step back, hold our governments accountable, and say, whoa, 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 hold on a second here. If we develop all of these natural resources now, if we pull this stuff out of the ground, we're going to destroy our water resources, we're going to destroy the quality of the environment, the quality of our air, for a quick, you know, cash gain, when in reality what is eternal is water, air, and earth. You know, this is what's going to help our children in the future generations. And so First Nations people, I believe, especially our tribal leadership in this province, when they're thinking about economic development, they have to, I think, definitely think about that factor. And they have to realize that if we are going to make that move to the next energy, you know, renewable, sustainable energy economy, we as tribal nations need to come together and invest in renewable energy development. We need to back up our talk as First Nations people in terms of our responsibility to protect Mother Earth, and we need to look at wind power, we need to look at solar power, we need to look at tidal power. There's a great opportunity for First Nations people to really take the lead, I think, in this province and across Canada, you know, to make that move. The other thing that I think here in BC that First Nations people and all people need to be aware of is the discussion that is happening around lifting the moratorium on an offshore oil and gas development. I know that Haida Gwaii, groups on Vancouver Island are being courted by the oil and gas industry to develop their offshore oil and gas resources as an economic development opportunity. And this is something that absolutely cannot happen. You know, we've already seen our brothers in the Salmon Nation be so incredibly harmed by the forestry industry, the mining industry, and if we tackle them in their home in the ocean, we know that there's going to be even more damage to come, and along with all the other life, and one only has to look at the tribes that live in the Cook Inlet up in Alaska and see what's happened to their ocean ecosystem up there with the 13 platforms, offshore oil and gas platforms up there, and what it's done to the health of the Cook Inlet tribes in Alaska, you know, who have lived with offshore oil and gas development there, to really understand that the moratorium on offshore oil and gas development here in BC must continue. It must not be lifted, and all BC residents need to really, really, really hold this government accountable and make sure that, you know, our oceans are protected from the reaches of these greedy transnational oil corporations.
I want to thank you very much, Clayton, for joining me this morning and bringing your experience and perspective in. And hopefully we'll stay connected with you and we'll hear a lot more about your issues in the future. And thanks for coming down to the studio.
Thank you so much for inviting me down. I want to invite everybody to check out www.ienearth.org. That's our website. Thank you very much.
Thanks. I've been speaking with Clayton Thomas Muller. He's an organizer with the Indigenous Environmental Network, and as he mentioned, more information on the network's website can be found at www.ienearth.org.